We're back by popular demand.
Yeah, people have been bugging me. Bugging is the wrong word. People have been requesting that we hurry the hell up and record another episode.
It's been a rough patch for us on the recording.
You know, you've been sick with the flu, and everybody up there in Poughkeepsie's been sick with the flu, and all of Brooklyn is dying with the flu, apparently. Everybody I know.
But you missed it?
Well, I'm not in Brooklyn anymore.
But have you missed it?
Yeah. We're completely isolated. We don't go anywhere. So we seem to... Actually, my wife got sick for a couple of days, which is odd because I didn't. Usually I do right away and then she does. But, you know, it must be like... I don't know what the hell's happening. But a lot of the flu is hitting close to home this year. It wasn't that heavy before in previous years.
Yeah, this was brutal. We were out of commission for like a whole week.
It had to do something with the vaccines, right? They were like off target or something.
The vaccine. I don't remember last time I got the vaccine, but this year I got the vaccine because I was like, I don't want to be sick this year. But yeah, the vaccine is like totally not effective, basically.
Is it a vaccine? Is that the right word?
The
flu shot.
Okay. Yeah. And it's like 20% effective or something. But I don't know if it made it worse or what. But I usually, many years, I do get the flu since the kids have been in school. Mm-hmm. But it's like a couple days and then a couple more days of being boogery and you're kind of back. But, man, this year it was like 4 days of like just the chills, fever part. And then and then I'm still not. Like now this is like almost 2 weeks. And like I'm going to have to put a lozenger in here in a second because I still have this like sore throat and... I'm much better, but I mean, it's crazy.
We get it for the brutal. We don't get the flu shot, but we get it for the pediatrician gives it to the little one.
Yeah.
And he always has like a day of this fake flu because of it, you know, because it's like subsided version of the real flu or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
And so he gets like a day of flu, but then he seems.
But the
to
kids
be,
even. Even when the kids get it for real, like our son had it, our oldest had it first, and they don't get it as bad generally. Like they like mope around a little, and then in a day or two, he was like pretty much fine. And but then as an adult, you get it; it's like just wipes you out, and then you have all these little people depending on you, which I think that's a big part of it. That makes it obviously much worse than
it's kind of hard to take a day off and say, "Yeah, I'm out for today."
Exactly, and then my wife got sick at the same time, so. Which that's the worst. Usually we're able to avoid that, and one of us, like I usually get it first and she gets it last, but that's all right because then I can help out or whatever. But we both got the same time, and that she was slightly after me, but it was brutal those couple days where we were both really sick and the three kids because they don't care. They're healthy and they want to do stuff and run around and get up early and all that. So. But
enough with the flu talk.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx you.
Don't acknowledge it. It'll go away. Don't bring attention to the flu. So we're 10 years in January 4th or January 10th or something. 10 years of running the company. You're 10 years, right?
Yeah, I think in March or something like that is like when we officially started. Although I started working on it. It's already definitely been 10 years since I started working on HelpSpot, but we didn't like incorporate until March or something like that of 05.
Andy Bryce is 10 years, Oryx.
Yes.
Who else? Everybody's doing that 2014 year. This is the year of the year in review.
I know, everybody's tons of the year in review.
I haven't done any because you got to zig when the other guys are zagging.
Yeah, you do them sometimes, I feel like.
I used to, but not this year.
Yeah. I've never done one, I don't think.
Well, I'll give you one now. 2014 was our third best year.
Well, see that? Look at that.
We're up.
And who would have thought that? If you listened to this podcast for the past year, you would have never thought that.
We're up 40% from last year. You know, it's the same way with the other podcast that I did with Gavin, the What Now podcast. It was like all misery and death throughout the whole year. And then at the end of the year, we're up like 20%. Yeah.
But then the other way.
Yeah. So
and you've already started off 2015 hot. You're already super busy.
Yeah. So last episode, like a month ago, I was lamenting that we're coming up on 10 years and I'm bored and lonely working alone, and I wouldn't mind entertaining some CTO and maybe lead mobile dev positions or something like that in order basically to work with a team full time. Yeah, to work with people. And I'm not even it's not even the money, because there's just no way the salary the salary wouldn't be able to compete with what I'm making on my own anyway. So it's really just for the team type of a thing. In fact, I'd probably be getting a pay drop if I took a full time.
But to get more, you know, it's always that balance. But in theory, it's more stable.
In theory, you know, but you get...
But with a startup, that's not really true, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You hear about all these layoffs, and, like, even back when I was working full-time, I jumped ship because the company's... excuse me, because the company was going under me every couple of months, and it just, it was never stable. I mean, it was stable for our parents' generation, maybe, but not...
Yeah,
not
that's true.
So I mentioned that a month ago, and, you know, I've had a couple of people inquire, both remote and local in Manhattan, for lead developers, lead mobile developers and CTO level and things like that, five or six or something like that. And so I entertained all of them because it was more like an exploratory type of a thing. It wasn't like, you know, like I was desperate to get hired somewhere. But it was interesting to explore, especially after 10 years of not. First of all, salaries have really increased. I mean, what I was making before and what these positions. I mean, I understand it's a higher level position, but still, even for entry level or whatever, it seemed that salaries are higher. So that's one thing. But, you know, like my biggest thing was that. So all of these places were like, they were ranging between, like, some are VC backed startups, stealth level. Early stage type of things, and some of them were more established, and some of them weren't VC backed. They were just like, you know, like middle of the road established companies already.
Right.
So they were all over the place, and like a small percentage of them turned out to be really good, but overall, the vast majority of them were really terrible experiences. for the exact reason that I expected them to be terrible experiences, which is, like, generally speaking, an aggregate. I'm just going to, not without naming the companies or whatever. It was basically like some VC person that funded the company, or some person that's running the company who's non-techie and hiring either CTO level or lead mobile developer is approaching me, and then basically set up some sort of an interview on the phone if it's remote, or I came into the city if it was local or whatever. And basically there was like a level of not giving a shit, you know.
Right.
it was really odd. Like you're essentially hiring a base foundation of tech people for your company that you're starting up. These were the ones that needed like that early base foundation, not the ones that were established and looking for like senior devs, but the ones that were looking for more like lead developers to hire a team after they came on. And you're essentially like one guy got the position wrong. Like he invited me in for like one thing, and then like he was talking about the entire other thing, and only like during the course of the conversation, he's like, oh, this is like, I'm talking about a completely different thing. He's like, some guys were late, showed up late. I understand you're busy, but like, I don't know how busy you could be if you're just like neglecting, what's going to turn out to be like the foundation of your IT.
Crazy.
And the one thing happened that I knew was going to happen is a bunch of these founders and VC, none of these were like techie founders though. So maybe that was the thing. They were all like business guys and business women. Mm. So all these business guys and business women who called me in, a few of them sent in their like existing developers, which is kind of odd because I was in essence going to be like the manager or boss of these people, but they still, I guess, but maybe it was like a personality conversation rather than anything else.
I could see doing that.
But they were like 20-year-old kids, and 20-year-old kids don't know how to have a conversation that's not a technical conversation. Like they think they're interviewing a tech guy and they're going to throw tech stuff at me.
Right.
So they're throwing like, they're trying to figure out if I know my Googles, and all I'm thinking is like, I've literally been coding before you. Like, I'm not even exaggerating. And it just felt odd because it's been a while since I did this, and that was never the case when I was like, maybe I was in the same age with the person who was interviewing me, but this was like literally I was calling before they were born.
Imagine what it's going to be like when you're 55.
Well, hopefully I'm over my whim of trying to go through this. In the end, I decided it was just not worth it because the salaries wouldn't have compared to what I'm making on my own. And the only reason I'm doing this is to work with a team, which a lot of them were actually excellent teams. And I probably, if I did need a job, a lot of them would have been great things to pursue. Because New York especially has really changed. Like there's a lot of great startups that are mobile based in the area. That's not Wall Street. So that's at least interesting. But you know, the ones that were at least in New York and I went into the city early, like around the time morning rush hour would have been, just to see what the logistics would have been like.
Right.
And then by the time I got back, it was already late. And it was literally, I left the house before Ethan woke up and I got home when he was asleep, which means I would have taken that position. And this was a light day. This was just a day of conversations and lunch with these people. This wasn't like a day of work where, especially if I was a lead developer, I would have been there for like 10 hours or something.
Right.
So the logistics worked out in a way that I would literally never see Ethan except for like Saturday and Sunday. And that's just not acceptable.
Yeah. Once you get used to being around, it's hard to pick up a commute and all that. Especially that's probably a pretty hefty commute, especially depending on where in Manhattan you have to go.
Yeah, I saw the other day somewhere online it said like the commute, the getting rid of the commute is equivalent to a $20,000 raise in the perception of the person going through the commute.
Well, depends on the commute too. I kind of miss having a commute. Like I miss a short commute. I think there is like a value in that, like 20 minutes, 15 minutes.
Like a mindset change type of a thing?
Yeah. Like I missed that. Yeah. I'm trying to replicate that last couple of days. Like just go up into the bedroom and hide. And like just meditate or chill out or whatever, but like it's still not quite the same as like truly changing physical locations. But
none of my commutes were ever short; they were always like an hour and a half. Yeah, to get from Brooklyn to the city by train, it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's no good.
So I decided to get over my whim of pursuing any of this and just get on with it. Oh, and during this time, like I got two more clients and like two more projects from two new clients and existing projects that are still there. So I'm getting all this work and I'm set like until April now with client work. Then I have to get on with the product work. So I'm like really set. You know, a long time ago I was reading this article by this freelancer consulting guy. And like the whole point of the article is like he structured his life where he worked for 6 months. He like blocked out an entire time for 6 months. And then for 6 months he traveled. Well, I'm not saying at the time I was like, holy crap, you could actually like make that happen. But now it's like, I'm not saying I'm going to travel, which I won't travel for the tail end 6 months of the year, but I could totally see stuffing out the first 6 months of work full of work. Like that's totally a viable thing now.
Like, or just lock yourself into like take all of July off or something. You know what I mean? Like just say you're booked, like start even with that kind of thing, like just take a month or 6 weeks just completely off where you don't have anything scheduled.
It's probably going to wind up happening that I'm not going to take on full-time projects after like April, but I'm going to take on like maintenance level work, but I'm going to retain the open sets of time to do products because I gotta do products out the window. Well, I guess mobile, I send like, something stuff out.
Your products, you're saying?
Yeah, Scribbleton, and there's a bunch of pending things that are pending.
That's the thing, like, that is the nice part of freelancing. Like, product, like, you think you can do that, but it's really hard because there's just always forever stuff going on, like, that it's hard to really just take months off or whatever. But, like, even though in theory you couldn't, some people do it. I don't know, it's not my personality or whatever. But with the freelancing, the only downside to me seems like, you know, you just have that pipeline of work coming in, and if you just let it stagnate for 6 months, like, can you just pick it back up instantly or whatever? But mobile is such a good spot. You know, it's such an obvious thing to outsource for most companies, since unless you're building a mobile product as the core of your offering, you know, so many times it's an additional component of whatever the core is. So outsourcing that just makes a lot of sense. So
there's a lot of client work coming in, but I'm not under any like delusion that it's going to continue. This is just an unsustainable level of client work.
Honestly, I think it's going to continue. Why not?
Well, I've been saying last year that it wasn't going to continue, and I basically saturated the entire year with client work last year. So far into the first quarter of this year.
That's just your scheduling. You need to work on your scheduling.
Yeah, I still haven't reached the point where I'm okay with sort of subcontracting out. In fact, I declined one project, like my first project, from somebody because I just knew I wasn't going to be able to fit it in. Mm-hmm. I tried to find a person to give it to pass the client to, as not as a subcontract, but as another, just as a, you know, transfer to another developer, just not to keep the client waiting. But I couldn't find anybody who I trusted. I mean, I approached two or three people that I trusted that I knew was going to do good work, but they were all busy too. All good mobile developers, like really, like scheduled to the max right now.
You gotta hire somebody like out of school and train them up.
No,
train them up.
I've been through that. No, thank you. But I'm still left with like not being socializing enough.
You're in with us every day now, though.
So I'm in the Slack room. So I got the Slack and the HipChat. I'm on HipChat and Slack with like at least four clients. I did sign up for, I'm going to go to Pierce. I'm going to go PierceConf in March, I think. Oh, April 30th, I think. I'm going to go to PAX, hang out with Gavin and the Retro Dreamer team and play two days of video games. That's in Boston. That's in early March, I think. And Charles from ReleaseNotes.tv, he's putting on a conference in October, I think, for building startups with mobile apps, like a mobile app, micro ISV bootstrapping thing type of conference. So they're over at ReleaseNotes.tv, and you could sign up for that conference there. So I'm probably going to go to that one too. They're in Indianapolis.
Oh, so, man, look at you going all the way out west.
Okay. that's got to be – and I don't know if I'm going to LARCon or not. Maybe I'm going to LARC. It's so odd that I'm not like a PHP developer, and I wind up having like my entire circle of friends are like PHP developers. And maybe something else. I haven't seen anything that interests me, but like that's gonna be my replacement for having to work with a team. Is I'm gonna go like hang out with my virtual Twitter friends in real life in various places.
That's what I have done a lot of in past years. Like I don't know. I was thinking about dialing it back, but then there's things that like I want to go to Peers. I want to go to MicroConf.
The PAX thing. Are you going to MicroConf this year?
I have a ticket. I'm probably going. I didn't get that hotel room yet, but.
It's too expensive for me this year. I don't know what it cost last year.
It is really expensive.
But what was it, like $800 or something?
I think it was like, $900 or $899 or something like that, $799.
It's just too expensive.
I mean, the hotel room is super cheap. It does balance out a little bit because the hotel room is like free practically, but it is an expensive flight out there too. I don't know. I thought it would be cheap to go to Vegas, and maybe it was just the time of year or whatever, but last year it was like $500 for the –
I would have bought the tickets if it was like $400 or $500. $800 is too much for me. A plane ticket and all that.
It ends up being a couple grand.
I bought PAX one day at a time off of StubHub or whatever that reselling site is because they were all sold out. I had like 200% markup and the whole trip cost me like $400.
Yeah. I am interested in this PAX thing. I thought maybe bringing the oldest too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems kid-friendly-ish, but...
I mean, I've seen videos of it.
You might want to go to the Bacon Biz. The Bacon Biz is not as expensive.
I'm going to go to Bacon Biz if, you know, when they open up the tickets, I think.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like the Bacon Biz. It's more intimate, so that's kind of nice because it's just like 50 people or whatever.
If enough of like people I know go, I'll go. Because the only reason I'm really going to these places. Like.
But you're breaking out here. I can't believe that. This is crazy that you're away from home this much.
I got to do – well, I mean it's spread out across the year.
It's actually not really. Once you line them all up, they're all like in April and March. And then you might have some in the fall or whatever. But it'll feel like you're going a lot. Trust me. That's how it feels that way. Then your wife will yell at you. Trust me. That's how it goes. But do it now while you only have the one kid. That's the way to do it. It's hard with the three kids leaving the wife. She doesn't like it.
You got to extrapolate, right? One kid is a life-changing amount of awesome. So let's have 11.
Three is just the right amount. Three is really one too many, but I like our third one, so it's okay. keep her around.
As long as she amuses you.
See, now our kids are really bad from the ages like 1 to 3, though. Like, it's more than just terrible twos. It's like terrible twos plus like the back half of the ones and the front half of the threes. So like, she just has gotten into that zone now, and she is a terror. She's yelling and copying her brothers, trying to do stuff she shouldn't be doing. And oh man, she's the little baby princess, but tomboyish / just loud. So she used to sleep later. Now she's picked up waking up early from her brothers. So everybody's up early.
I'm a year ago, I was walking with Ethan, trying to put him to sleep, put him to bed at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, because he was crying, whatever. And just last week, he's sitting in the office on a chair next to mine, at the desk next to mine, and on his iPad or something. And I come into my office. I come into my office and I sit next to him and I look at what he's doing. And I'm like, Ethan, what are you doing? And he's like, Papa, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm trying to see what you're doing. And he's like, bye, Papa. This is my office.
He's like, get out of my office. Leave me alone. I'm trying to get some work done here.
He's all opinionated now.
So now I know you applied to speak at Piers. I think you put in some abstracts. Are you trying to speak anywhere else, or that's the only one you've attempted to speak
at? I put in 2 talk proposals at Piers, and I think that's it. Charles is not opening up this year for talk abstracts at the Indianapolis conference. Mm-hmm. So I'm not doing anything with that, and I don't really have any interesting ideas for talks for anything else. Like PAX, I'm not going to talk at. What am I going to talk about? PAX is a different thing. Bacon Biz is a lot more like micro ISV-ish practical advice type of a thing, I think, and I don't have any talks like that.
We don't believe in that.
We don't believe in teaching people anything. I don't know what else, where else I'm going, but the way it turned out, like Piers is the only conference for which I have talks lined up. So I submitted 2 for that one. I was going to submit 3, but like, I don't know. I figure 1 of the 2, I'd be happy if 1 of these 2 get accepted.
Nice.
What else? Oh, HelpSpot 4, right?
HelpSpot 4.
Oh, got to give a shout out to Andy Bryce. Sorry. Hyperplan was released. So good for him.
Oh, yes. Hyperplan. So,
we'll link to that in the show notes.
Seems like it's off to a decent start. I know it's hard to tell from his tweets, but he sounded pleased with it, so that's good. Mm-hmm. Second product, always tricky.
Second product is always tricky. What do they call that in the music industry? The sophomore album?
Yes. He did have a product in between, but I don't think he actually released that one for sale.
Yeah, I don't know whether that one actually made it out.
I think he just sent that around to like friends and family kind of thing. So I think this is his official second product.
Yeah, it's a planning tool. It's like a visual planning tool.
It's just Trello for your desktop, basically.
I guess.
It's more power user oriented, I would say.
I don't plan things. So I don't use Trello. We had a Trello board for this show at some point.
Yep, we did. It's still up there, but we don't use it. I feel like that's 99% of Trello. We actually do use it at Utrescape for a few things. And we pretty much kind of use it for those things. But I also have like 20 other boards that just sit there. Like you think you're going to use them, but you never use them for anything. So
HelpSpot 4.
HelpSpot 4. Not out yet, but getting closer.
Getting close.
Beta this week. Some real early people will get the beta this week.
iOS version's done, although I do have a few patches I submitted. You don't have the latest build yet. Android version is finishing up.
Yeah, I saw you were working on that conversion there.
You monitoring my Git submits?
No, I actually didn't see that at all. Is it in Git? I guess we did set up for Git. No, I didn't see that. I saw your tweets about Android conversion stuff, which I figured it was for us.
Android UI work is terrible. It's awful. You save a lot in the language because it's easier than Objective-C. But you lose a lot on the custom UI because it's harder to lay things out in Android.
Really?
Now I'm going to get a whole bunch of emails about how it's easy to lay things out in Android. That's fine for like generic off-the-shelf type of stuff, but it's much harder to lay stuff out when you want it to be pixel perfect.
Right. Which is how we roll.
Which is how Userscape wants things done.
That's right.
At Userscape.
I know. I'm so excited about the native apps. These are like, these are huge. People are going to freak out over these because some very high volume of feature requests. So to have those will be very nice.
So what's your release and marketing strategy over there with the, your big users, user base?
At least
user base that does not want any hiccups in their stuff.
Well, yeah, well, those are two totally different things, right? But like, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. Marketing wise, I have a few things. I'm trying a few new things like Spiceworks. We're going to mess around with a little bit, which is like an IT focused tool and community, and a few other things like that. I don't know. Not too much on paid advertising, but a little bit with Spiceworks I'm going to play around with. But yeah, the beta, we're just going to roll it out. Like in the past, I've just done betas where I'm like, it's beta, whoever wants it, come get it. But this one makes extensive changes to everybody's installations. Mm-hmm. So going to be more cautious and just roll it out to a very small number of people at a time. And then once it, we get all the quirks worked out, we will, you know, make it a more broad thing. But
now you have you have a couple of big clients, and you still get a good response for when you call out for people who to help you with like beta installations and stuff.
Yeah, no, they do. And like we actually had something even weirder than that. Like probably like 4 months ago now or something, we sent an email out asking for people to like actually give us their databases so that we test it. Right. You know, locally before just asking them to test on theirs. And we had a lot of people do that, a surprising number, more than I thought would, between just figuring, A, people, you know, don't want to give you their data. B, you know, a lot of the people that we have direct email access to aren't technical, so they're not going to know how to, like, get the database and send it to us and stuff. So, and they're also not going to want to go to IT to deal with it because IT is going to
get. You didn't get any 100 gigabyte SQL dumps as attachments, and
so we did get some big databases, which was great. But like we got enough people who knew what the hell we were talking about to give us some good data, and we had them SSH it over, you know, SFTP it into a server or whatever. Yeah, no email. One or two people might have attached it to an email, but most of the people sent it over the right way. So no, that was great, and which was super helpful because Chris, who's been primarily working on that and you know, debugging it and all this stuff, has like been using those to test the upgrade, and because the whole upgrade process is all new, and we convert everybody's databases, and it's a whole bunch of data that gets moved around, so it's a big scary task. And so having now run through it thousands of times is nice versus just sending it out and seeing what happens in real life, although I'm sure there'll be hiccups there too, but so far so good on that. And yeah, then the other thing we're doing is we've doubled down on like training stuff. So like I have a guy who Dave, who edits the podcast, is going to be doing some custom training materials for HelpSpot, because he
Dave is a renaissance man.
He is, and in his previous role, he onboarded a lot of people into HelpSpot. Like that was part of his job, was training new HelpSpot users in the organization he worked in. So he's going to do some kind of like train the trainer and frontline staff training materials, which are a little bit different than, like, we have manuals and documentation, but this is going to be a little bit more accessible and training oriented. And then we have a discourse forum we set up. So we moved, that's kind of a big thing. We moved away from, so HelpSpot has a very simple forum tool built into it, mm-hmm. Which is like super optimized for the context of you're using it for customer support and you're supporting people who show up once a year and want to ask you a question just on a forum, not with at all with the mindset of like a traditional internet forum where it's like people hang out and have labels and have profiles and hang out there all day, all the time or whatever. So so over the years, it's been great having the forum, but it doesn't let us have like that kind of community forum aspect because it's not built with that in mind. So we moved, I converted everything over to Discourse for that. So which is a little bit weird. I'm a little bit nervous about that because in the sense it's like we're not using one of HelpSpot's features. But to build a full-fledged forum like Discourse is, I mean, that's a whole – it's basically a complete other product. And to flesh out help spots to that level, I think for most of our customers, that wouldn't really make sense because that's not how they're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And it could never compete with Vanilla or Discourse or PHPBB or any of the big forums. You know, it's never going to be able to be what those things are. So if you need those, that level of functionality, it's just better to use the right tool. So converted that over. And then we're going to have like this academy, basically just a blog, but with stuff, instead of being, as we've done in the past, more externally focused content, it's going to just all be stuff that's for the HelpSpot user base. So, so we'll see. That's kind of like the broad strokes, but yeah, it's like it's a lot of different components kind of coming together now. Fours and beta. We have a new back office that's part of being able to let customers buy more easily and manage their orders and just improve and greater security and things like that, which and be able to iterate our store more quickly versus my million-year-old code igniter like store that's literally like 8 years old and pretty much never been touched. So that's almost done. And then we're going to do hosting of HelpSpot, so that we need the new back office for that, so we could more easily kind of hook everything together and bill for it and all that. So a lot of moving parts, but almost there.
Cool. Yeah, are you doing that thing where you have one database per customer for hosting?
Yeah, definitely. We're not going to make a lot of changes to HelpSpot. Mm-hmm. So everything's set up, going to be set up so each is just like its own install and just run it like that. We're not going to try to SaaSify it in terms of like...
Yeah, I mean, the hardware is now so much cheaper than it used to be back
then. Yeah, exactly. Like, I bought this like giant monster server and it's like, it costs like nothing, and we could add more, we could do... You know, it'll all be set up too, so we could do totally isolated installations if somebody wants to pay us for that. I mean, they'll all be isolated, but like dedicated hardware for a single installation or whatever. I mean, you could do pretty much anything. So, yeah. So we'll see. There'll be like another month or two here, I think, where it's still everything's kind of rolling out. But I think by like spring and summer, everything will be solid and in place, and everything will be in a much, much better place than it was last year this time on the HelpSpot end. So that'll be good. And we'll have a bunch of stuff moving forward. And HelpSpot 5, which we're going to get right on after 4 comes out.
Are you sticking to an annual release cycle now?
Yeah, I definitely want to move to annual release cycle. I'd like to get 5 out even maybe in the like late fall and then have the releases be in the fall. But I don't know. That was my rough plan, but it might make more sense to keep it in the spring. I'm not sure. But either way, I want to try to get pretty far ahead on 5 this year. And definitely there'll be annual releases from now on. So
cool.
That'll be good. Yep. But tons going on.
All right. What else you got? I got nothing. I talk a lot.
Already. You did talk more than normal. The only other thing that was in my head from, and this is back on the mobile world, was like everybody in their 2014 releases, you know, 2014 look backs have been talking about their mobile apps and stuff. And it's crazy. We can link them up in the show notes. But actually, the blog post by Chris of Figure 53 kind of summarizes a lot of them. So that'll be a good one for us to link to. But it's just amazing how little money there is in these apps. Like, I mean, that's like the Figure 53 one. I mean, they have a dedicated staff and they're all top notch. And one of the, they acquired one app and they sell another, and they sell them for like $20 each or whatever it is. And they still, you know, it's like at basically $50,000 a year.
And yeah, that's like actually what struck me. I'm not a stranger to these like postmortems of mobile app developers who are posting like $20 revenue numbers. It's just a part of the sadness. But what struck me is that it seems like people who are more established and don't need their apps to be like successful are pulling off what an indie mobile app developer would consider to be a successful revenue year. like Marco Arment with his podcasting app or whatever that app is.
Right.
His numbers are what he would call average, whatever, but he's coming off of like a liquidation event or something. And
right. Yeah, his seem to be the best, by far the best I've seen.
Well, he has a following, and people who have a following right. are the first like to say, like, this has nothing to do with my following. But,
I know.
But and your launch is like, yeah. your launch is your launch because of that.
Especially on mobile, where the launch is like everything. I feel like the launch on mobile is incredibly critical, way more than a SaaS app or something
right.
like that.
And even Chris from Figure 53, it's not like, his moneymaker is the regular desktop version of his app. And this is just an almost like an ancillary type of a complimentary offering for the iOS and stuff. And whatever he made off of that was $80,000 or $60,000, whatever that is. A mobile app developer, an indie mobile app developer would consider that a successful app.
Yeah.
You know, he presented it as a sort of, yes, I understand you have multiple people, multiple salaries working on that for a long time, but it's the same with indie developers, and they would still consider that a successful year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a matter of perspective, but it seems like that people, I don't know what to say about it. It just seems like people who are not in a position to make their living off of it are making numbers that they think are low but are actually very good numbers for making revenue off of a mobile.
But I think that's crazy. Like 50 grand a year is not enough to like
no.
Like if you did that as an indie, right? Like and then you had to pay your own health insurance and you have to pay tax on the 50 you made. Like that's really only like $10,000 a year is what you made. You know what I mean? Like it's so wild that like and what else one of the interesting things this other guy I posted off of the Armand post was that basically that like there's only, you know, 2,800 apps or something that make more than $50,000 a year. And so then if you have that, and then if you filter out the like EAs of the world and whoever makes Angry Birds and all those big companies, like you'd literally have a handful of people making anything that could even be considered borderline livable, because obviously after taxes and you have to deal with your own healthcare and you have to set up the business and you have to like have an accountant and all that stuff. Like, okay, so maybe after all that businessy stuff, you make 20 or 25 grand or 30 grand. Like, there's probably 1,000 people or less at this point, like who do that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And out of all the like from the perspective of somebody who's worked with a lot of people who have apps in the mobile app store. Everybody who's hired me for mobile app, iOS or Android, none of these apps are sort of like consumer focused, top chart seeking apps. They're all like either sort of like informational apps for like agencies, like government agencies type of a thing,
right?
Or you know, like sort of like HelpSpot, which is like client apps for existing services. But none of them are like something that they would pay me like $20,000 or something, and I would make an app for them, and then they expect to make a profit off of that based off some launch.
Which I mean, to be fair, I guess those numbers are strictly kind of speaking of like an app that makes all of its money from selling in the app store.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, you know, obviously there's apps that have ads in them, which I don't think do that great, but I'm sure there's a few that somehow manage to make that work. Or of course, like you have some subscription thing, so it's really that you're subscribing outside the app store, and obviously that money is not counted in any way, or it's not easy to estimate. But even so, with mobile being so big, you would think that there would be more than a few thousand, you know, just straight I sell it for $2 in the app store apps that would be able to make, you know, over $100,000, let's say.
Yeah, You were talking about ad based, but like there's app examples of every kind of revenue model that are successful.
Yeah.
But like every time it's like almost an out, like a Monument Valley.
Right.
People like businessy people like Inc.com type of publishings, they kept saying, look, Monument Valley is an example of the fact that a paid for app without in-app payments or ads can now make a living off of the Monument Valley took like $750,000 to create like a team of people. It's not like an indie, a real like one person in the basement type of a thing. So and it's an outlier, and it's even in that because there's probably a bunch of, you know, $750,000 apps with a team of people that made no money. So
and I feel like it's also even I feel like games themselves are just complete outliers, because games I feel like is one of the few things where you can drive some traffic from outside of the app store itself. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of sites that are devoted to gaming, that people who are into gaming really follow those sites and buy things based on recommendations on those sites. So you could actually market a game. Like, that's still possible. Because I feel like productivity apps or any kind of businessy kind of app, it's not, I'm sure people do it, but it seems to me it's much harder to market in the traditional sense versus at least a game. There's still an angle outside of just App Store. Apple chooses to feature you, luck. There's some cards you could play versus like other type of apps.
I guess it's a form of marketing if you establish it. Like Marco Arment, and you mentioned that you have a podcasting app that you're working on, and then when you release it, it's successful.
Right,
that's a form of marketing.
Yeah, that's now how it's like everything with the SaaS apps and bootstrapping, right? Like, it's so much now about somehow building up an audience, and that's why you write your ebook or whatever, like just to do anything to get the audience, so that you can launch it into an existing market, because there's not a lot of other good ways to do it these days. And since you can't charge a lot of money for anything, you can't just get like the way HubSpot started, where we just had $1,000 sales, and it didn't take that many $1,000 sales to replace my salary. And then it was
your marketing was like your blog.
Yeah, and I just had a blog. We had 80 people on a beta list. So it wasn't like we had 30,000 followers. And now where we've screwed up is over the past 8 years, I should have been building up those followers, and we didn't. So kind of getting better about that going forward. But nonetheless, now you have to charge your $15 a month for something, and you have to wait forever till that, grows into something. So you need to you need to give that a kick in the ass in the beginning, because you need to get it to that couple $1,000 a month level at least, so that it's at least self-sustaining and you can afford to work on it or at least run it, and things like that. So I don't know. Yeah, Marco is ridiculous. And people, those super high-profile people always say that. It has nothing to do with their user base, but it's... I don't know if it's like one of those things where they like psych themselves out of it, and they say, they don't want it to be about that, so they just say it's not about that, and that's what they think. But obviously, if you have a very popular podcast and you build a podcasting app, you are directly selling something that the people who listen to you need to use. So of course, that has a huge impact on the launch, and which has a huge impact on the media coverage you get, and just in general, you have this ongoing marketing channel, because if you're listening to me on this podcast, you need a podcast player most likely to listen to it on, since very few people just go to the website and listen or whatever. So, you have this ongoing marketing. It's kind of an edge case in general, a podcast player versus, just some other businessy app, but I don't know, crazy.
There's no visible area of the software world right now that I would say has an easy time getting traction, like outside of outliers in the, in the funded space, or the guys that appear on the TechCrunch or something.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that usual fare, like a regular person regularly bootstrapping a regular company.
Right. It's just so much more competition.
Yeah, I don't see any mobile or SaaS or whatever super niche-y things. I don't, everything seems to be so much more. You started with your blog, and I started my company with one forum post.
Right.
And that's not viable at all now, and I don't know what is viable these days, but I'd be uncomfortable with almost any area that's visible. I mean, I'm sure there's areas that are not visible, that's not in the foreground that people are making money off of in the software world. But I don't, that's probably within their super, super niche area that you wouldn't even understand unless they explained it to you.
Well, I just think now you have to have so much more foundational work. Like, we got to just start writing code and start with the product idea, which is the fun part, like the product idea, what you wanted, the problem you want to solve, like working out how to solve it. Like, but now you have to have that more methodical approach of building an audience and doing all that stuff, which to me is no fun at all. It's marginally fun. It has its moments and it's all right, but it's not as satisfying as product development. And then to have to start with that before you can even get to the product development part. I don't know.
I'm going to open a crepatorium and make crepes.
Real world, physical world. I'm all about it.
Or the way my wife and I call them, creepies. Making creepies.
Are you gonna what's up with your apps? Do you have any new app ideas, product ideas that you're gonna do, mobile or sassy?
I still have those things that we talked about even last year that are still pending because I just got flooded with client work. Yeah. Once it starts, that's it.
How's Scribbleton? Like, is it still the downloads staying up? Or
Scribbleton has influx? Like fantastic download numbers, except that I can't like monetize on it because, you know, we were talking about last time that it needs like a pro version in order to be able to charge for it. Yeah. I don't have time to make that pro version. So I need to slow down and throttle the client work that's coming in the later half of the year in order to really pay attention to the product stuff.
Yeah, because yeah, people like the Scribbleton.
They do. It's very popular. It's just free.
You got to put a little ad in the corner.
No, thank you. Yeah, it has like tens of thousands of people, I think.
Yeah. You got to have synergies between that and your other products and push them out to those other products. What about the new BlackBerry? BlackBerry came out, the new phone. You got to fix your BlackBerry stuff up.
BlackBerry fucking screwed me again. 10 years later, they still managed to screw me. they released this thing and they called it BlackBerry Classic. So all the users that are like they're still using BlackBerries that bought it because they're like diehard BlackBerry fans, and they think that it's because it's called a BlackBerry Classic and it has a keyboard that it's still running like the old Java operating system, and it's not. It's running all that new BS that they're running now that's not compatible with any of our old software. So they're all like, oh, this is a BlackBerry Classic. Can I run the spam filter on it now? I'm like, no. So now I got a whole bunch of support tickets about people because BlackBerry's marketing department screwed me over. They have no consideration for the boot of. I just don't care.
Look back into it with
no.
With if maybe now it is possible to move the spam filter.
I literally have minutes a day of free time. Like you're asking me these things like literally pulling up the website and looking into it is all I'd be able to fit into a week's of free time. What good would that do if the answer is yes or no? Either way,
it's crazy.
I wanted to play a game yesterday. I keep buying these games.
I know you're only buying games. You have tons. He works 10 hours a week. He plays games 40 hours.
I don't play them. I just buy them. I bought games off of last summer's Steam sale that I haven't played yet. I bought like 40 games, I think, that I still haven't played. But I can't pass it up. There's like an 80% off sale on the game that I want to play. I'm going to buy it. And I'm never going to download it. So yesterday I'm like, it was 11:30 at night. And I'm like, I gotta figure out a way to remember how to relax. So I downloaded the game, and like by the time I finished downloading, I'm like, I'm too tired. I'm going to bed. And like, I hated myself for it because like there has to be balance in life, you know? And just, yeah. There's like no balance. And I'm like, maybe this is how it should have been when we were first starting out, but this is how it still is 10 years later. And like I'm starting to hate myself for it. Like, why am I pulling 11-hour days? I'm like, I'm not launching anything. I'm not waiting for, what do they call it, the runway. I don't need to make it before the runway runs out. Like, why am I doing this? And that's just how it is. It's because like my brain makes me feel guilty for doing anything that's not work. Yeah. That's fucked up.
I think it's like our generation of micro ISVs or something, but I'm like pretty much the same way. I don't know how to get us out of that. I've been working on it. I've been trying to get out of it, but it's hard. It's hard to not think about it all the time. It doesn't even matter like how much bigger the company gets or anything. It's like you still have that that it's just so ingrained in how you do it, and it's hard to break that. Hey, I was thinking about speaking of games. Did you like this Last of Us game?
Yes. I have the poster in my room.
They're making a movie out of that.
Yeah, whatever.
I wonder if that's gonna be any good.
There's just no way. I mean, like the only movie I have ever considered acceptable that came off of a book was the Watchmen, when they made the Watchmen from the book. That was the only reason that was good. It was like a frame by frame exact copy of the comic.
I saw the movie first and I tried to go back and read the comic, but I don't know, but I've never really been into comics, so
I don't care about the Last of Us movie.
Yeah.
I don't care about the Martian movie.
Martian movie, what's that? Oh, the Martian from the book.
Mm-hmm. and do weirs.
Yeah, I don't know. That book kind of, I liked that book, but then it disappointed me at the end. I think the end's a little bit of a disappointment.
The end is perfectly molded for a Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah, they did do that, but I'm even thinking, like, forget the actual details of the ending. Hopefully, somebody in the audience has actually read the book. It's not going to make any sense. But
don't talk. Don't. No, just say spoiler. No, just say spoiler alert. Like
spoiler alert.
Come back in a couple minutes. Spoiler alert.
Come back in a couple minutes. But basically, I wanted some, like, I thought you're going to give me a sci-fi book about a guy stranded on Mars. Mm-hmm. I want some aliens. No. I want some kind of alienness.
You missed the point.
Doesn't have to be an actual alien.
You missed the point of hard sci-fi.
I don't need a little green man. No. But I need something. No.
Hard sci-fi. Hard sci-fi is reality with a bigger budget for NASA. That's what hard sci-fi is. No.
I want little green men. I wanted some type of alienness. It was just so, like, straight. There wasn't even any, like, twist. The only twists were, like, does he live through this part? But there weren't, like, twists really in the story.
It's Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I read that. It's in space kind of version of that. I think Robinson Crusoe was better. But I'd have to read it again. It was all right. I like Matt Damon.
I don't think Matt Damon would be a good fit for that.
No?
No.
I like Matt Damon.
No, it has nothing to do with what I think of Matt Damon. I just don't think he'd be a good fit for it.
But you see, you have to have a big star because it's basically a one-person movie.
Yeah. Well, it depends how they make it. Because they might focus the entire thing on, like, the other side, the Earth side.
I get. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some scenes of that, but I mean, it's got to be mostly about that the guy on Mars. You know?
But Evs,
I watch it. You've seen 2001, right?
I have. Yeah.
Did you see? I tweeted a link, but it was Soderbergh there did his own cut of it. It's really quite interesting.
I didn't see that. I gotta find your old link.
We'll link it in the show notes. Because the original 2001 is like I think it's like almost 3 hours long, right? 2 hours, 40 minutes long or something, and his recut. It's under 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still remarkably has a very similar pace. Like, it doesn't feel like he cut out 50 minutes of stuff, but he did somewhere. And
you want the Michael Bay version of 2001, which is basically 10 seconds of space station rotates, an explosion, and a monkey hits another monkey in the head with a bone at the end.
Oh, I love the original 2001. That's why it's surprising. I think he cut out like some mostly out of the middle, I think. Where they're not really doing much of anything at all, and he kind of jumps right to it being much more about Hal. So it's really like Hal's the main character, and he like cuts him in more. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting take. I wish I had watched the original. Like now, I want to rewatch the original because it's been a few years, so I could really more closely.
Did you see watch them. Moon?
You always talk about it. I did watch Moon. I don't even like remember it. I just know I watched it, but I didn't think it was that great. Because good. I don't even remember any of it.
It was good because it was a pure nugget of sci-fi without any bullshit around it.
Maybe that's a problem. Maybe there was no little aliens.
Aliens.
I bet you that's why I didn't like it.
You just got to get any movie, just send Gordon Gekko through it like the Energizer Bunny, and you'll be happy.
But look at 2000 Space One, right? 2001, they have alien-ishness, right? But it's no little green men, but there's a little flavor there. Give me a flavor. Did you see Interstellar?
No, I haven't been to the movies in years.
That's
and years
a pure
and years
high
years.
Sci-fi. That's a doesn't no little green men. So you would like that?
I wish they make a.
Well, this one, oh, no, I don't. This kind of little green men. It depends on your interpretation.
I'm trying to think of a movie with little green men that I find acceptable that you might like, and I can't think of anything.
You like Star Trek?
Yes, I guess.
Oh, with little green men.
The original Alien.
Oh, there you go. I've never been a big Alien fan, but it's been like forever since I watched it. So I've been meaning to try and rewatch that and see how I feel about it now as a older person.
I can't think of anything else. I think the original Alien is the only acceptable. Yeah,
well, you don't like Star Wars. Obviously, Star Wars is.
I do not like Star Wars.
Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy?
No.
Oh, it's spectacular. It's by far the best of the Marvel movies. Like, it's not even close.
I saw the remaking, the Fantastic Four, the darker version, which I approve of.
Yes.
I like that the darker good. Version of anything. Yeah. I told Fideloper the other day, yesterday, in fact, that they should have the guy who made The Watchmen make a movie adaptation of Dark Knight Returns. and make it as dark as possible. And all, every comic book fan would just like...
Just physically dark, like you can't even see anything.
Just make it awesome. And every Star Trek, every comic book fan would love you for it. Because that's like, that's one of those books that's like deserves to. Or The Killing Joke or something. The Killing Joke, the dark version of The Killing Joke would be too awful to watch, I think.
What about this? What about the proverbial Little Green Man movie, E.T.?
I didn't like E.T. When I was young, I looked exactly like, what's his face?
Yeah, the main character.
Yeah, not E.T. I know that. What was his name?
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I know who you mean. I gotta look it up. Billy or something like that. Something mainstream.
Elliot! So I looked exactly like him, and I got flack for it in school.
I got flack in school over looking like the guy from Egon from Ghostbusters. I'll take B and Elliot.
He's a beloved character and beloved actor.
He is beloved now, but when you're in first grade, they don't care, whatever grade it was.
Other people's children.
Did you see Snowpiercer? That was a good movie too.
Watching that? You just finished telling me that you have no time like me to do anything other than work. When are you watching these movies?
I just spanned a 30-year range of movies. Like that's not...
No, Interstellar and Snowpiercer were like
Interstellar. I did go see. Interstellar, I went and saw. Snowpiercer, I just rented at home one night, and Guardian of the Galaxy, I just rented at home, and I'd be watching it again.
We're making our way through Fringe.
Fringe,
which as a sci-fi, there are better, but as acting, probably the best piece of sci-fi. That's acting wise ever.
Really? I don't know. I just think I watched one or two of them. I couldn't get into it. We are rewatching Lost from the beginning, which will only go up to like season 3 probably, but that's great. You've seen Lost, I hope, right?
I've seen like first season of Lost. I can never get into that.
Lost is the best. If you like sci-fi, you don't like Lost. Especially the first season or two is fantastic. You've got to rewatch Lost. Forget this Fringe crap. Yeah. But before you do any of that, right now, after we get off, I don't want you working. I want you to go watch Guardians of the Galaxy.
No.
Oh, it's awesome. Awesome.
My head will explode if I do something not worky in the middle of a worky day.
Yeah, it does kind of mess with your mind a little. Like when I was sick and I physically like couldn't get out of bed, I was watching movies on the iPad and I was just like, I feel like I should be working. Like if I could do this, can I work?
But this is like PAX temperature. 2 days in March during which I can literally do nothing but play video games, and like it doesn't even compute in my head. I might just like implode on myself.
That might be too intense for me though. That's I'm worried about that. Like there's not too many game geeks for me in one physical space. I don't know. It might be. But I can't believe you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy. I am Groot. You don't even know what that means.
I know it has a raccoon in it.
Oh, and you think it's stupid, right? That's why I didn't just movie kid. I was like, this is stupid. I can't believe how stupid it is.
It has a raccoon in it and a guy from Parks and Rec.
Then it was like the only thing to watch on iTunes, so I was like, all right, I'm going to try this. Fantastic. So much better than the other Marvel movies. Unbelievable.
What is the other Marvel – what are you comparing it to? Anything with Stan Lee associated with it is going to be awful for me because it's all loony-toony.
I like the Guardians of the Galaxy because it embraces that a little bit, whereas the other ones that like, they're trying to make it serious, but it still doesn't make any sense that like Thor, who's a god, is running around with a guy who just shoots arrows. And, like, why do these people need each other? Like, it doesn't make any sense that they're all together as the Avengers. Like, there's no logic in all these people working together. Whereas the Guardians of the Galaxy, it has a logical reason for them to be working together. And they've made it outer space, so more – it's a little more free-flowing versus, like, this – I mean, there's a component of Earth, but it just ties together much more nicely than the other Avenger other Marvel world movies. Although I do want to see Ant-Man. See the Ant-Man?
They're making a sequel to Blade Runner. They're going to fuck
it. Oh, yeah, I saw that. They're going to butcher that. That's not going to be good. You can't make a sequel to that. You got to see Snowpiercer, too, though. That's kind of wacky and out there. That's pretty good. What else? Moon, yeah, I saw it. I don't remember. I like The Fifth Element. You ever see The Fifth Element?
Yeah. I don't think they're making a sequel of that.
Nah. But you don't need a sequel. Bruce Willis. Awesome.
Anything Bruce Willis is awesome. That's like totally a stupid thing to say and it sounds like a fanboy thing, but I love Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
I loved Bruce Willis since I was like 11 years old.
The Fifth Element, like Die Hard in space. That's all it is. It's great.
The Fifth Element is awesome. I'm not on the whole, I don't like the whole cartoony orange thing it has going on in that movie, but overall it's pretty good.
Yeah. it's way out there. Like, it knows it's out there, and so I like that.
12 Monkeys is good. I'm just looking at the list. Total Recall is good.
You probably like the Serenity movie, right? Isn't that your kind of thing? Serenity and Firefly.
Firefly is a masterpiece.
Firefly was okay. I feel like there's not enough of it. It's hard to bestow it to that level because there's not enough of them. Isn't there only like 12 episodes or something?
It's 12 or 14 or something. All right, we're way off track here. We got nothing to talk about.
Sci-fi movie review podcast. Done.
No.
Star Guardians of the Galaxy next week.
This is not even a proper movie review podcast. It's just two idiots talking about movies they like.
We should do a proper movie review podcast. I've thought about doing a movie review podcast. Just like 10 minutes. Just like I just say what I think about a movie. But then that seems boring. You need a hook. You need some kind of angle. You need some controversy.
You could sing it.
No. Maybe you could come on. It'll be you and me. I'll name a movie and talk about it. You'll say I haven't seen it. And that'll be your contribution.
This is the pilot right now.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could do a game and I'll say I haven't played it.
That's
and then
true.
That'll be the balance, yin and yang.
Taylor, the other day, he IM'd me to get a reminder about what that game was I was talking about. I was referring to Gone Home. And he thought it was a mystery haunted house detective thing.
Yeah.
He's going to be so disappointed.
That's what I think it is, too. I think I own it, but I haven't played it.
So disappointed. Well, the best I could... I'm not going to talk about it here, but the best I could tell him is that, you know, it's a narrative rather than what you think it is. And I'm hoping that if he at least approaches it with that in mind, he would get out of it what I got out of it. But
well, at first you kind of think it's like, what was that game that was big back in when we were kids? Or well, we weren't kids, probably like college age. No. It's scarier. Like we were in this house and like goblins and they made movies out of them. Oh, what was that game called?
Pac-Man.
No. There's like it was like a first person shooter, I think, and there's like zombies, and like you
Wolfenstein?
No!
Dude,
zombies, man.
There's no zombies first person shooting when we were kids.
Yes.
When we were kids it was Wolfenstein.
And they made like five movies out of it.
Resident Evil?
Yes, Resident Evil.
We were like mid-20s.
No way, not when the first game came out.
That wasn't the first person shooter, it was just an over the top.
It wasn't I can remember. Let me see here. Yeah, look at nine. I think it said, oh, hold on. Resident Evil series. Oh, it's Wikipedia.
We got no listeners left.
Hold on. Everybody, hold on.
Nobody left listening to the show.
Where's the game?
Why are
version?
We still recording? This is embarrassing.
Video game, 1996. Okay, so I was 20. So my time period was right. You were like 15 or something. 17.
I can't math. Right.
So there you go. I was right and you were wrong. That's all anybody needs to remember.
Fuck. Iron Man 2 should not be on any list of anything. I'm just looking at this list of top sci-fi things.
Yeah.
This person should be banned.
I think the original was okay. The other ones are...
Pitch Black is good. Go watch Pitch Black. It sort of has little green aliens, but they're not little or green. But it has Vin Diesel. So.
I like Vin Diesel.
Pitch Black is awesome.
Oh, is that part of his...
Riddick series.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've never seen this Pitch Black.
It was the predecessor or the first one?
I've only ever seen the one that they played all the time. I don't think they played any of the Chronicles of Riddick, I think.
That's a sequel.
Yeah.
Pitch Black is the first one. It's the best one, I think.
Really?
I like Vin Diesel. Yeah, plus, he went to my college, so I like him.
He did?
Yeah, he went to Hunter.
I like Vin Diesel, too. Vin Diesel's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Whatevs.
I am Groot.
You see the raccoon?
He's Groot, the tree.
Okay.
Oh, it's awesome.
The tree is not the raccoon. Who plays the raccoon? A raccoon?
Did they
animate a raccoon?
No, Bradley Cooper is the voice of
the raccoon.
Of the raccoon.
It's an anthropomorphic raccoon.
He does a good job of that because I would never recognize him as the voice.
I'm done recording the show. I'm done with this. This is way off track. This is embarrassing. Plus, we're past an hour talking about nothing. This is worse than Seinfeld.
At least Seinfeld kept them tight to 20 minutes.
Seinfeld at least had interweaving storylines that sort of made sense at the end and came together. This is shameful. This is shameful. Goodbye.
This is what people want.
Goodbye.
They're begging us for this.
I'll come up with some content for the next episode. This is awful. See you later.
Bye. Bye.